The Health Education and Social Services Committee will come to order. Let the record show this is February 7th. And note the presence of members of the committee, Representative Milo Fritz, Representative Miller, Representative Cato, Representative Tischer. Let the record also show that the chair has received a message from Representatives Coben, Gall, and Davis, who have been detained at a luncheon with the governor, and will be here as soon as that luncheon is finished. Although I dislike postponing and recessing, I also dislike having to go on without the members, but I think that we'll proceed hoping that they'll arrive shortly. I'd like to welcome all of you who have come to testify and observe. Hope that you will understand that this is not a court of law or inquiry, that we are very interested in hearing from each and every one of you. Since we have three folks listed here, one of which will would like to testify, I don't see any problem as far as congestion for, oh, here they come, for testimony is concerned. Let the record show now that Representative Kopanen and Gall are present, and I can presume that Mr. Davis will be on his way shortly.
Right. Thank you.
Very good. For those who wish to testify, our committee staff has asked you to sign up so I know what your name is. And if there are anyone present that has not signed the sheet, we'd appreciate you doing that. And when you do testify, we'd appreciate you giving your name and the organization which you represent, if there is such an organization, and to be sure to speak up so we can all hear you. We are taking under consideration today House Concurrent Resolution on Hepatitis B, and it's the intention of the chair to move that resolution out of committee today. We will also be looking at House Bill 108, which is the inclusion in the state exempt service of licensed physicians in the Division of Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities, and we hope that we'll be able to move that out of committee also today. We'll be also considering HSCR 1, which is disapproving the Executive Order 54 dealing on the Department of Corrections, and we will also hear Committee Substitute House Bill 103, which establishes a Department of Corrections and transferring certain functions of the Department of Health and Social Services to the Department of Corrections. Let's see. First on the agenda will be information on hepatitis B, and we have with us again today Dr. Rabeau, who we've asked to come back to give us further information. Thank you, Doctor.
Good afternoon. I understand that the committee would like to ask some further questions regarding hepatitis B.
Yes, at our last meeting on this subject, Doctor, there were some questions that arose that we felt would be good for us to hear back from you again. And if the committee members would like to approach Dr. Rabeau, or do you have a statement to make, or any additional information that you might be able to give us, Doctor?
No, ma'am. Outside of the fact that we are proceeding with our program plans for rapid expansion of a control program for hepatitis B, and that we are at the present negotiating a contract with the Alaska Native Health Service to receive the funds that they have in their appropriation to put into this control program. Outside of that, I'd say everything is going well as can be expected.
Are there members, are there questions from the members? Doctor?
Stuart, I've spoken to many people about this hepatitis B, and some are anxious that the department and the Bureau of Indian Affairs is concentrating only on Western Alaska. And their concern was that it's very easy to get from Kotzebue or Quetluk or any other place to Ketchikan, let's say, or here in Juneau or Fairbanks and Anchorage in a short time. And that certain people, for instance, emergency medical technicians and other people in emergency medical service, frequently come in contact with people who are severely injured or ill, diagnosis unknown, and therefore they ask me whether they are being taken into consideration for people at risk. I assured them that that was true, but I thought getting it from you would relieve their minds.
Yes, sir, Dr. Fritz. They are one of the categories that we consider at high risk, and there is explanatory publicity and information going out to all health providers throughout the state, urging that such people receive a blood test. Now, we, of course, will pick them up as we go through the villages, but there is nothing to prevent them from either going to one of our health centers or going to their private physician, if that be the case, or going to whatever medical facility is available to them and getting the blood test performed now. In answer to your first concern, I'd like to point out that the thesis of the program is to attempt to wall off, to screen and wall off the highest risk groups first. And while we have a program that is scheduled to go out in the Kuskokwim at the beginning of March, we are in the interim requesting health providers, hospital personnel, and other healthcare personnel be screened. And we have done some of the institutions in the state, and we have notified and are sending out additional information to the others through the State Hospital Association, for example, urging that they get their staff screened. Now, we are not only going in the Kuskokwim, although while we will send a team out there to start with as the first one, we expect before school is out to have screened several of the other cities in northwest Alaska. We expect to do Nome and Kotzebue. We want to get them screened and vaccinated before school is out. That is, we want to get the first two doses, which are only a month apart. And so we're under a fairly tight schedule on that. Barrow, we presume to do this summer because of the fact that there's very little personnel movement out of the community of Barrow. At the same time, we're also going to come into some of the communities in Southeastern. And we have been in communication with Dr. Wilson, who is the director of the Anchorage Municipal Health Department, and all actions in Anchorage will be done by his department. And they have already started a program there to pick up some of the high-risk groups there. So actually, it's going to be a very active program, and it'll be statewide. And again, let me assure you that the emergency medical technicians are one of the categories that are considered at high risk. And in the information document I gave you last time, if under those where we try to estimate population, we had them considered in there. We had them enumerated. So I hope that will allay your, not your fears, but the fears of people that have talked to you.
Doctor, may I ask you a couple of more questions that came up in my circulation as the family doctor of the legislature? One of them was that are we buying only our vaccines made domestically, or do we purchase them in foreign countries, or are they only made, or are the vaccines only made in the United States?
To the best of my knowledge, it is only licensed by one maker in the United States, And as far as we know, there are no foreign makers, although we have been able, up to this time at least, to get all the vaccine we need from the one maker in the United States, who happens to be a very large and very reputable pharmaceutical house.
Dr. Fritz, continue.
May I ask you, Dr. Elbow, about this, about administering the vaccine? Who may do it? By what I'm getting at, is it only MDs and osteopathic doctors and registered nurses in the public health service or in BIA, or are nurses, aides, and others allowed to give those vaccines? Vaccine injections, excuse me.
Well, we expect that basically it will be licensed physicians, and it will be our public health nurses in the health centers and the public health service facilities where they will be given initially, although it is a simple intramuscular injection and could actually be given by community health aides who have been trained to give the injections. But because of the cost of the vaccine and because of we want to be certain that we're not missing the people, we're going to have a fairly tight list of people that will be giving it at least the first two injections.
One more question. I got my first notice as a practicing physician, and I've spent, as you know, many, many years in the bush. I got a release from your department explaining what hepatitis B is and what the epidemiologic facets of it are, and I want to make sure that those who are here understand that this isn't something that the legislature dreamed up, that but your department was on it. I think it was back in early November that I received my routine notice about the importance of it, and that the Department of Health and Social Services had been looking into the matter, taking care of it, long before we ever convened. Is that true, Doctor?
That is absolutely correct, Dr. Fritz. In November 1981, I requested a supplemental appropriation to initiate a program at that time. And unfortunately, it never reached the legislature.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Davis.
Well, Dr. Vogt, a number of us just came from a luncheon meeting with the governor, and I think I could say safely that this governor has a long-term commitment to work with the federal government to work for eradication of this health problem. I was wondering if you've seen this current House concurrent resolution that's before us.
I'm not sure. I saw a version of it.
Well,
for the record, Mr. Davis, perhaps the chair might read it so that everyone can hear it, since we don't have enough copies. This is House concurrent resolution number hasn't been identified yet in the legislature of the state of Alaska, 13th legislature, first session, related to hepatitis B. Be it resolved by the legislature of the state of Alaska, whereas the hepatitis B virus is becoming a significant health problem in the state, and whereas screening examinations are required for approximately 86,000 high-risk Alaskans, and whereas failure to respond to the hepatitis B virus threat will incur long-term social and fiscal costs, and whereas the only known means of preventing hepatitis B is through an immunization program, and whereas the Indian Health Service has requested $3 million over the next 3 years to help eradicate hepatitis B virus in the state, be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature respectfully requests the governor to move expeditiously to develop a program to eradicate hepatitis B in the state. A copy of this resolution shall be sent to Governor Bill Sheffield. Continue, Mr. Davis.
There was some discussion in a prior meeting that we had about one other whereas, and it was, and I hesitate to bring it up, but I'd like to have your opinion on it. Whereas hepatitis B has been known to cause several complications of the liver and to increase the susceptibility to liver cancer, there was some discussion back and forth that it might create alarm to people if that was in the resolution. I don't know if it's fair to ask you to comment on that, or you think it's a serious a health problem that we should include it in the resolution?
Well, I was shown that, and I recommended against the inclusion of it in there. I think that it is, the semantics there are very emotion arousing, and that it would be needless. Almost, well, every form of hepatitis has complications and can cause death, but so can almost any other illness. And I think that, well, for the want of a better term, let me say gilding the lily. I don't think you need it in there. And again, let me urge a couple of facts that everybody clearly understands. Hepatitis B, while it can cause, for example, a liver cancer, which is still relatively rare, and it can cause complications like other forms of hepatitis can, it is not as easily contracted as, for example, the kind of hepatitis that everybody's aware of. It really requires prolonged and close, intimate association or contact with infected blood or blood products or serous discharge. That's why if you look again at the population at risk we talk about, you will notice that it's basically healthcare providers, and those are really the ones that are in clinical contact, not all. For example, we don't recommend all of the hospital staff be immunized, only those that come into clinical contact with potential patients. You will also notice that in several places we allude to sexual contact, and it very definitely is caused there. And that's why, for example, the gay community is considered at high risk because of the deviant practices. It's also why sexual contacts, which are usually picked up through sexually transmitted disease treatment, are at high risk for it. And the other one are household, members of a household, people who will come into, and I can't emphasize enough, prolonged and close intimate contact with an individual. That is probably one of the reasons why it is higher, for example, out in the western part of Alaska than in other parts of Alaska, because of the fact of cramped and close living quarters. We have been unable, at least to this date, to find any genetic predisposition. In other words, this person is not more likely to get it than that one because of their racial makeup, but because of their environment. And I think the resolution as is if you want a personal opinion, excellent one. There's a couple words in there that I hesitate to tell you probably are slightly inaccurate, but it's really hard to give you a better word, and that's, you use the word eradicate. Again, this will not eradicate the disease, it'll prevent the spread of the disease, and eventually, of course, will lead to the eradication of it. But this is different than many of the other conditions. This is, the vaccine can do nothing for somebody that has already had it or is a carrier. It'll only prevent those who are susceptible from getting the infection. And that's why the term eradicate is partially incorrect. But the term control, for example, on the other hand, is kind of an insipid term, I think. So I only offer this, I probably shouldn't even comment on it, but that actually is the status of it. And again, the program that we're putting into place is one that will wall off the focuses of infection and prevent the chain of infection from spreading. And again, and I think I told you this last week, that if the cost of the vaccine was much less than it was, I would unhesitatingly just recommend that everybody be vaccinated. And who knows, in 2, 3, 4 years, perhaps the cost of the vaccine will be a tenth of what it is now. And we can then just do like we do with every other of the childhood diseases, and just vaccinate everybody.
Mr. Klein?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I presume that the contract with Indian Health Service will be presented to in the governor's budget, and any additional funds will be requested at that time. There will be a state, a fiscal stake in this, but that now is not necessarily the time to deal with it.
Well, there is, the governor has made a firm commitment that this program would be supported and that the state would be involved in the support of it. We are negotiating, as I said, the contract with A&S to get a hold of the money that they have available now, which will be somewhere between $400,000 and $500,000, plus about $500,000 worth of vaccine that they have already contracted for. That, of course, will be used to take care of their legal responsibility, which is the Alaska Native. The governor, the word we have is that the supplemental will be supported, and that there are plans, if necessary, to pull it out of other parts of the department budget right now, and that we are submitting through channels to the governor's office a budget amendment for fiscal 1984, which is of $500,000.
That's not necessary for us to do anything with this resolution that would incur any cost.
Well, I don't
not
predisposed to tell you what to do. I think that the fact that the committee has found it worthwhile to mention is a very commendable thing, and that I personally support your calling attention to everybody involved, that you really think this is something that needs to be done. Now, there is a Senate Bill 96, Senator Sackett has introduced a bill for a $250,000 appropriation now to get the program underway. And it is my understanding that the department supports this bill.
Dr. Fritz.
I'd rather yield to Mr. Gold. I've already spoken.
Thank you, sir. Just very briefly, for persons who consider themselves to be at high risk but are not included in the categories specifically enumerated thus far, if those people are of limited financial means, is there any way for them to obtain vaccine? I mean, like a person who knows someone, for example, who has the disease and feels they have been in sufficiently close contact to create misgivings in their mind, can they come in, or he or she come in and receive any assistance from it?
Well, that's a hypothetical situation, and let me make sure that my answer is clear on it. If an individual is considered at high risk by the department, we will furnish the vaccine. We will test free of charge anybody who sends a blood specimen that's taken by a licensed provider to our laboratory at Fairbanks, where it's all being done. If they are negative, which means they're not immune, and they're at high risk according to our category, we will see that they are furnished the vaccine, or we will vaccinate them. The situation you described is a little hard to answer, because you said if they know somebody, and it's got to be a carrier, not somebody who just had the disease, because only about 10% of those who have had hepatitis B become carriers. But if they happen to know an identified carrier and they happen to be in close contact with them, by definition of our standards, they would be at high risk and we would vaccinate them. If we do not consider that they do not meet in these categories, the answer, I'm sorry, is no. We would not provide the vaccine. They can get it from any private physician.
Well, I'm a little concerned. There might be a person who is sexually active and not a homosexual.
That's fine. They're at high risk.
Not
by our definition.
I'm sorry. Is that the fact that a person who is heterosexual and sexually active?
Oh, yeah.
We
only pointed out that the gay community, because of the fact that they have a great proclivity, I think is the word, sexual practices, that they as a group are considered at high risk. But, right off on the first page, I get down here and I say sexual and household contacts among carriers.
But, I mean, the person might not know that he's had sexual contact with a known carrier and yet be as sexually active as a homosexual. Or someone, for example, who cleans restrooms for their living might be coming in contact with all sorts of discharges in his or her work. There are a lot of people who are not specifically enumerated in here who might be at high risk and might consider themselves to be at high risk. And I suppose really you've answered my question that unless they are on your list, they are not eligible for any kind of assistance.
Well, by definition, if they are sexually promiscuous, we would consider them at high risk. The answer to the fact that they may clean restrooms is no. That is not the person that does that is not at high risk, at least for hepatitis B.
I see. You mean if there is blood-to-blood contact?
Infected blood.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but it has to be to an open wound, like a cut.
Yes, sir.
Or it has to be serious.
Exactly.
In that case, yes.
So a person would have to come in and say, see my cut finger, I clean restrooms, I think I'm in trouble. And then they would receive some...
Yes.
I'm not trying to be flippant.
No, but you're stretching the point a little bit on me. The answer is
well,
yes.
Well, a couple of people have called the office, mm-hmm. and they've said, look, I don't fit into the categories, but I live in such and such an area, and I'm concerned. And I don't have $150 or $100 to buy an inoculation. Is there any way that I can get immunized against this dread disease? And basically, I've said not to the best of my knowledge, and that's what I am confirming.
Yes, sir, you're correct on that. And just by virtue of the fact living in a, quote, an area where there might be, that in itself does not mean that people are at high risk. For example, we will not, and now I'm talking about the Yupik Eskimos, which is by definition is the highest risk group we know of in Alaska, outside of the newborn baby of a mother, pregnant mother as a carrier, is that unless the prevalence, that is, unless the numbers of cases of carriers in that village are 5% or higher, we will not immunize everybody in that village. We will only immunize the household contacts. So now here is a village that, for example, falls by definition into the area of high risk, but there's only 4% carriers in that village. All we will immunize are the household contacts of those carriers. We will not immunize the rest of the village.
Dr. Ravel, I understand that the planning for this is based both on your perception or the department's perception of the medical need and also on what you can reasonably expect to be able to afford to do. Given the funds, would you feel that it would be advantageous to expand the parameters of your program or do you think, in fact, that the program is sufficient as it stands? And I hope you'll...
Right. Well, a candid answer to that is yes, because it's either a program like this or vaccinate everybody or make the vaccine available to everybody in the state, and there's really no in between. About the only difference possibly could be that instead of trying to do this over a 3-year, that we could compress it to a year or a year and a half, which is really unreasonable.
Do you consider this program sufficient?
Yes,
as
I do.
It stands?
And I like to point out that this is the only state out of the 50 that is even running a program like this.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
May I make a comment? I'd like to inform the committee, those who do not know it, that vaccination is not without its own risks, that there are complications of vaccination in certain neurological diseases, especially among children. So it isn't a harmless procedure, as Dr. Ribot, I'm sure, will authenticate his statement, that you don't want to just vaccinate everybody because the risks haven't been assessed yet. The vaccination hasn't been given to enough people to discover the complications of vaccination, for whatever interest that may have my fellow committee members.
Thank you, Doctor. Are there any more questions, Dr. Ribot? Thank you very much, Dr. Rule, for coming back to us. I think that you've got some questions, and we appreciate the professional advice from you.
Well, appreciate the cooperation.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Gall.
Thank you. I'd like to know, please, whether this bill has then been moved through this committee.
No, it has not, Mr. Gall. It was was our intention to move it out, hopefully, so that we can take care of it expeditiously. I wanted to advise the committee, however, that this has not been submitted for a number and so forth, based on the previous changes that we talked about last time. That now this is our final proposal, and I'm asking the committee for their consent to agree to the language of this resolution, based on what Dr. Rabot has just told us, and that we perhaps take it upon ourselves to at least enjoin and trying to move it out today, asking for staff and to get an assignment and so it can be read across, if that's the proper procedure. Mm-hmm. Good.
Go ahead. Oh, I've spoken before.
So have I. I'd like to move the bill. I'd like to make the motion to move the bill out of committee. I would like to make just several small amendments that were mentioned by Dr. Rabot, which on line 17 they would say after two prevent the spread of hepatitis B in the state, and also on line I don't know whether that's 18 or 19 after program two prevent the spread of hepatitis B virus in the state.
What was the second line, Mr. Davis?
Excuse me, Chairman. Line 18, I believe it is, it says, after prevent the spread. I think we might as well be accurate on this.
Mm-hmm. So we'll substitute for both, on both lines, instead of using the word eradicate, we will substitute the phrase prevent the spread of. Is that what you're trying to
do? That was my motion. I didn't hear a second.
You don't need it.
Oh, you don't?
Am I right, Madam Chairman?
If you say, Dr. Fritz, that's
fine. Well, I'm no parliamentarian.
Do you have a copy of the rules?
And we need a copy of the Mason's manual.
We can vote
that.
On that change if you'd like.
I don't
see any problem here. Are there any dissenters on that motion to change the wording, the language? Are you objecting?
No.
You have a comment
I'd like to make. This means then that we'd have to go back to legal services to be redrafted, and consequently could not then be brought out as rapidly as we so desired. Correct?
I think what we could do in answer that, Mrs. Cato, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, I think that we can use this as a vehicle with the recommendations, if everyone agrees that we should move this out based on that amended language. Agree in advance that this is the language, ask the staff to go through the procedures of getting the assignment, and with our concurrence on passing it out today, by virtue of what we have just said, I think that's all right. Is that all right?
It'll be referred back to committee.
It'll be referred back to committee, but then we won't need to do any more discussing on it, we'll just push it right through. Is that agreeable to everyone? So shall we,
Madam Chairman, I think Betty's saying, and I don't want to delay the action of the bill, but I think, could we not write on your committee report, do pass as amended? Is that?
We don't have
it
a committee
report. It doesn't make any difference, Mr. Davis, because it will be referred back here anyway. So if we can do it now, or we can do it when it's referred back. The Speaker of the House will refer it back when he hears this bill or this resolution come through. So it really makes no difference if the decision is made, but I'd like to at least set this aside for no more further discussion if we agree upon the text of the resolution and direct the staff to get a number and ask it to be scheduled.
I want to comment on the text, Madam Chairman.
Mr.
I call your attention to line 16, where it says, to move expeditiously to develop, for we already have a program. So I would say for the governor to continue developing a program.
That is a good point.
I move. But that change be made. Because that implies that he hasn't done anything about it, or that there is no program, and there is one.
That's true. Is there a second to that?
Could I possibly?
Second, did I hear second?
Sure.
Mr. Kompanen, and before you, may I interrupt, would you give me that language again?
The beginning on line 16, the governor to continue developing a program and I have a further correction I'd like to bring before my fellow members. Instead of the word eradicate, to control.
That is a change from the previous motion.
That's fine. Chairman, that's a friendly amendment. That's fine.
Okay.
Very good. Mr. Gall, you had a question.
I was just wondering if maybe you wanted to say to continue to develop and implement a program. It's just a suggestion.
As I understand, Dr. Fritz, and from what Dr. Wolf tells us, there is already an existing program.
Yes, sir, he said.
And it has already been implemented. It is in progress of as long as the, as soon as the vaccine is received, they administer it. So I don't know whether or not that would be a redundancy or not. Do you agree? So let me just read the last, be it resolved then, for everyone's concurrence. Be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature respectfully requests the governor to continue developing a program to control hepatitis B in the state. Any objections to that language? Then I shall set this aside and direct the staff to have legal services rewrite and calendar this for the House. And when it comes back, we'll just look at it and hope that the language is still correct and that we have agreed previously that it would be all right. On to the next item on the agenda. House Bill 108, which is the inclusion in the state exempt service of licensed physicians in the Division of Mental Health and Development of Disabilities. We have discussed this previously. And you have a file on that bill also. Is there any information that staff has to offer before we can, this is the wrong one. House Bill 108.
We received a fiscal note on this. It's a zero fiscal note. That's, and there's also another summary, I think it makes three now. From this one's from APEA, the Alaska Public Employees Association, which also gives you some background on the bill.
What information?
Information from the Alaska Public Employees Association. In your file, you have a fiscal note that identifies zero, and you have memorandum from Teresa B. Kramer, Administrative Assistant, Blue Ribbon Commission on State Personnel Act. And you have a staff summary on sheet entitled HB 108. And you have, I think, a copy of the statute on a computer printout.
Would you entertain a motion, Madam Chairman, to move this out of committee?
It's my intention to do that. And
well, I so move.
Any second?
Second.
Motion has been moved and seconded to pass out of this committee, House Bill 108. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, we passed House Bill 108 out of committee. And while I'm on the subject of this, when the little signature slip goes around, I'd appreciate it very much if the members of this committee would pay attention to the side of the of the advice as to where you put your signature. On the left-hand side, it means do pass. There are no provisions for exceptions to that. If you have recommendations other than do pass, you shall put your name on the right-hand side of that form and make your recommendations as you wish. So I'd like to pass this around now, and I'll and I will sign that as it goes around. Does everybody understand what those little slips mean? And there's a provision for do pass on the left, and members who have other recommendations besides do pass shall put their name and their recommendation if they choose on the right hand side.
David, do you have a Mason's manual here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes.
Yes. Would you like a copy?
Yes.
While that is going around, let me draw your attention to the next item on the agenda, and that is for us the Executive Order 54, the disapproving thereof, the special concurrent resolution number 1, which we will take up. As soon as we pass that out, these are all in separate files, incidentally, so I've been shuffling around and I found out staff has been nice enough to put everything in separate files for us. I'll begin by asking staff to give us a report on any fiscal information that we have been searching for, asking for, waiting for on as far as this is concerned. Do we have any more information?
The concurrent resolution?
Does it require any?
Well, we don't have any.
I'll open the floor for discussion on the resolution. If there are any comments or any questions. Mr. Kokanen?
If we pass the resolution with this, I feel that this may delay the implementation of the expansion of the Department of Corrections, even though we have legislation, precisely because of the bicameral nature of the legislature and the committees that we're going through. While I support the legislation that has been introduced as a good cleanup measure, I think that we could allow the executive order to stand so the work may proceed in setting up the new department, and then proceed with implementation of the legislation to clean up the difficulties that Mr. Palmer's worksheet indicates.
Any response to that? Any comment? Stephanie, you have
no, the worksheet that I put out there outlines the differences between the executive order and the Hospital 103. Mm-hmm. All I was trying to do is give you an idea so you can compare the two, see the differences between them.
Well, as I understand it, Mr. President, Hospital 103 versus the executive order gives a handle on the makeup of the department that the governor is proposing. Mm-hmm. We have not yet been able to receive that which the governor is proposing as far as the makeup of the department is concerned, one of which is addressed in House Bill 103, and that is the that portion of the division, the existing division, dealing with youth correction. And it's my understanding also that that portion of the division is, in fact, a portion of the division, and proposed by a number of legislators, one of which sits on this committee, that it is more desirable to have the whole division moved over at once. The other thing is that even though some may say, and we heard Mr. Endall testify that at a later date they were anticipating that that could become a fact, there is in fact no later date specified, so it could go on for years. It could be as many as two months or such things as that. But there is no guarantee, as far as the legislature is concerned, that that will take place. And there is a feeling, I believe, that that should take place, and that we see no reason why it could not take place. If you leave the tailings behind, sooner or later you're going to have to grab them up and bring them over, which may be more difficult than it is at this time. Just picking the whole package up and moving it over. That's what I understand, and if I'm incorrect or if I'm being led astray, perhaps someone else can correct that. But I think that was the intent of the legislation of House Bill 103 versus what we have not been able to get from the executive order. So there are some major issues missing as far as this committee is concerned on the formation of that division of the Department of Corrections. I don't know that there's an awful lot of discontent or negativeness on the formation of the department, but how that is to be formed is another matter. Dr. Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As the author of the bill, I found difficulty with the executive order because juveniles would not be transferred at the time that the department was put into existence. Also, we have the very eloquent testimony of Mr. Endall on two occasions. It isn't anything that the legislature would be inclined to drag its feet on, that it would be a matter of days and not weeks before the bill was passed, and that the Department of Corrections would be in motion. And I just feel that the bill that I introduced would accomplish what I believe the governor wants and what all of us want in a very short time, because I believe both legislative bodies are in agreement that you can't keep 150 people in a place where there are 109 beds, and that Mr. Endall is already, he's here. Am I misquoting you? Said that this is a matter of emergency legislation, not something we can put off to another day when it's more convenient. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Any more comments about the executive order or House Bill 103 that you want to take up today?
Excuse me, I pronounced Mr. Endell incorrectly.
Mr. Davis.
Well, perhaps, you know, I think I share the concern with every member of this committee that we need to move quickly on the topic of corrections. And I do have some concern that House Bill 103 is going to have to go through the various committee assignments and it will take perhaps more time to implement than Executive Order 54. I guess my other concern, and maybe Mr. Endell could address that, is he did say that he would like to see at least the adult version of the corrections transfer first, get that house in order, and then bring over the youth facility. And I think my feeling that the whole legislature would be of great interest in making sure that would actually happen, and we could do that legislatively. Perhaps it would be good at this time to let Mr. Endell speak to having a whole ball of wax at once. That's my view, and I'd like to talk to him about this House Bill 103 and see what he thinks.
Really?
I think as a point of what's being accused right now is that the executive order, unless turned, will become effect in 60 days no matter what, unless a majority disapprove it. So by passing this out today, we're not saying, we are disapproving, we're stopping Executive 50, Order 54, because, the days are still moving on. We're not physically stopping that time frame, because the days are still moving on. So in that regard, we're not stopping, the 60 days, if you get what I'm trying to say.
Mr. Copeland?
Chairman, I don't see any inherent contradiction. I don't see that there's a necessary choice between one or the other. I think that we can allow Mr. Endell to proceed with setting up the department while we debate the other measures, not only youth corrections, but some of the other language in here, and do it more in a serious matter while he's able to scurry around and get the department started on its way. I think somehow I don't see that you have to be against the executive order in order to be for the bill. I think that they may be considered complementary to each other. That's my position at this point.
I think for the record, I'd like to just look over and orally examine what the comparisons are that staff's put together. House Bill 103 addresses transferring authority from the Department of Health and Social Services to the Department of Corrections for determining which facility is to be used for which people in prison and not on bail. That is not at all addressed in the executive order.
Those references just change the terms from Health and Social Services to Department of Corrections.
House Bill 103 references the Commissioner of Health, Department of Health and Social Services has changed to Commissioner. I guess that's just a change, is it not? And then it also doesn't address in another portion of the statutes. Dealing with volunteer work by prisoners, and below that on page 2, it talks about it, that which excludes administration of correctional institutions from the Department of Health and Social Services duties, leaving parole and probation and so forth. That doesn't address itself in the executive order, except by creating last section 44.28.101 to add probation, parole, and adult criminal institutions to the department. And also the change in authority for medical services is not addressed in the executive order. Changing the authority from Division of Corrections to Department regarding confidential records is also not addressed in the executive order. And I think that those issues, along with the juvenile section, are the differences, the total differences between Dr. Fritz.
Are you finished?
I'm finished.
One. May I answer Mr. Copeland in a way on this problem?
Mm-hmm.
I think also that we ought to keep in the legislature those matters that properly belong to the legislature and not leave it to the executive to have an executive order unless we fail in our duty. I feel that both houses, if they really expeditiously apply themselves to this matter, and I have every reason to believe that they will, that we can beat the 60-day deadline handily and have Mr. Endell in business much sooner than 60 days.
I somehow I'm in agreement with both of the prior speakers, but I don't see any problem with allowing this executive order to continue and to continue with House Bill 103 and let that move through the legislature. I know that was something that the governor identified in his task force. But my other comment or question is, am I correct that this is the first time we've had this bill before us?
Yes.
Would it be House
Bill 103?
Correct. Would it be appropriate then to, if Mr. Indell would wish to comment on that, would it be appropriate this time to hear testimony from?
I have no objections to that if no one else does. Mr. Indell, would you like to come to the table? Staff has pointed out that we are actually on open hearing for the executive order.
Concurrent resolution.
That we really have an open hearing and set our 5-day notice out. Do we not?
We have. It's just the next item on the agenda. If you could open it right now.
All right. I think we should open up House Bill 103 hearing room so that we know where we're at. Thank you very much. Keep me straight. Mr. Indell, would you like to speak?
Yes. I'm just looking over this memorandum here on these various bills. It looks to me like most of this is cleanup legislation, and I think that the executive order draft had a last line or two that said that wherever these kinds of issues were identified, that would be expected. My suggestion would be that my understanding of the executive order is that it does go into effect April 1. That if you wish to suggest to the executive branch that these kinds of things, for example, be added to the department or clean up the statutes and that sort of thing, that should easily be possible through legislation, which you would pass like this list of pieces, which would then be added to it as the effective date arrives, so that in your earlier discussion where you're talking about moving the Division of Youth Corrections into the department, you could indeed initiate legislation which would make that effective April 1 or July 1 or whatever date it is that you choose, which would be a separate piece of legislation, but it would have the same intent. So there are several ways. What I'm saying is I think you can put together your own package, and it would fit right into the executive order at whatever date you wish.
Would you not agree then that House Bill 103 does do that?
I think there's some difficulties there. I don't know the law well enough to tell you what happens if you pass another piece of legislation that essentially accomplishes the same thing, except for some differences. My understanding is the executive order is effective April 1, period, unless the majority of both houses kills it.
That's what this special concurrent resolution would do.
Okay. If you kill it, and then you pass your own legislation, I would assume that then would take over.
I think we're headed down the same road parallel, are we not?
Yeah. What I'm suggesting is that it seems to me, and I'm, again, not expert here, but it seems to me you'd let the executive order ride as is, and then you just submit new legislation with your add-ons, what it is you want to happen with the new department. So if you want the youth corrections moved in, if you want other statutory changes made, that's very simple. It's just added to the executive order.
Mr. Davidson and Mr. Copeland.
Madam Chairman, I believe you could check on Mason's rule, but I believe that an executive order cannot be amended. It would have to be additional legislation like this. And the other thing is, I was wondering if staff could provide us with Executive Order 54 as long as we're discussing it. I know I know we have a folder on that, each one of the members. Thank you.
Mr. Copeland and then Mr. Gall.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The problem with the legislation is not only the legislative process, but the enabling date of the legislation is 5.1, we would essentially be setting back the setting up of the department until July 1. And this is why I argue that it should be allowed to, the executive order should be allowed to proceed, and that then any amendments or changes that the legislature may wish to make can be handled in subsequent legislation. I also believe that an incoming executive officer, governor, has constitutionally the right to set up and structure his own administration within limits, and that we can comment or not. That's why the executive order procedure is established constitutionally and has been followed fairly well. And the legislature has always had a good deal of influence in setting up the departments, because after all, they are rather quickly put together as a new governor is inaugurated, so they do. I cannot think of a time when they haven't needed police. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Gall, I'd like to make a comment on that, if I may. That the July 1 date on House Bill 103 would have no more or less effect on the division versus the department, simply because a fiscal note on the executive order would either have to be asked, or there would have to be a special appropriation made for any changes if that in fact is going to cost. So all come back down to when the budget begins in fiscal 84 anyway. So I don't know that that's the point that we need to worry about too terribly much. Mr. Gall?
Yes,
and Mr.
Before I ask my question, is that correct? Is there no bearing on these dates, or do you in fact change your operation as of April 1st?
Right now, I'm planning, unless you folks take different action, I'm planning on April 1, we'd have a department online and ready to go.
Thank you, sir. My two questions, I'm a little disturbed by the continual concern with form as opposed to substance, and maybe I could ask you two questions of fact here. Number one, on the issue of youth, do you feel that as of April 1, your department would be prepared to take on the entire range of youth services that would be associated with corrections, or do you feel that it's in the best interest of the state to defer that?
I guess my preference would be that you would pass legislation that transfers youth corrections effective July 1. That would give us approximately 90 days to get our department set up and functioning, and then there'd be no doubt it would be transferring. It's just that we need to have 90 days to get ready.
You choose July 1 because that conforms with the legislation, or because the period is adequate?
Because the period is adequate.
And on this first note of difference here in this memorandum from staff, placing the rehabilitation of persons convicted of personal use of controlled substances with the Department of Correction instead of Department of Health and Social Services. More specifically, this is dealing with persons who are not felons, who are serving less than 1 year, who require rehabilitative services, either with the use of drugs or alcohol. Do you think that What is your opinion of this? Do you think it is best placed within corrections, or do you think the Department of Health and Social Services should continue to carry it out?
I'd have to look at that statute carefully, because if it means convicted persons, then it's just a language change. If these are not convicted people, then perhaps the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse should be responsible for that.
I believe, am I correct, that these are convicted people,
yeah,
right? But
right.
Non-felons.
Then there's no question that they should be in the... Then it's just a wording change. It's an oversight that they didn't get in the legislation Executive Order 54 drafted earlier.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Enfeld, related to Mr. Gault, question to you. Where is the Division of Youth Corrections right now?
They are within the Department of Health and Social Services, the Division of Family and Children's Services.
Who has jurisdiction over their incarceration?
The Family and Children's Services.
I don't know who is first. Mrs. Hale.
I'm having a problem with the date. It's probably something that's not registering here. You said by April 1, right?
That's executive order, effective date, yes. About 40, 45 days from now.
Thank you. Mr. Davis and then Mr. Fritz.
Well, it seems to me that the best course of action for us is to, I feel now, to approve the executive order because we're going to have a division of corrections or commission of corrections by April 1, and then secondly, then we have some kind of a bill like House Bill 103, which then moves in the youth facilities or youth corrections. The other thing, that's the way it seems to me. The other thing is that perhaps on House Bill 103 there could be some changes in that, because I see on Executive Order 54, the last page, there says Section 33 name change, which cleans up a lot of the language that's mentioned in House Bill 103. So perhaps that House Bill 103 would not have to go through with all the different branches changing the name, because this would be already taken care of by Executive Order 54. I guess my other concern is that we, the legislature, we're accused of it often enough. It would be accused of delaying this Executive Order 54, and I wouldn't want to be in the position of delaying the transfer of Division of Corrections any sooner than it can be done.
Mr. Davis, I would remind you that at the beginning of this discussion, when we first heard Executive Order 54, we were in need of information from the administration that allowed us no leeway but to wait for fiscal note and so forth. So I don't think that this committee nor the legislature needs to take any reprimand on holding things up. We are deliberating here, and I think that it is up to us to make that deliberation as thorough as possible with judgment coming from the entire committee. So, based on that, at least, Mr. Endall wanted to say something.
My comment was that I interpreted 103 as a helpful piece of legislation, not for us to dictate. Perhaps, though, that there's some overlap, and the overlaps could be addressed. So 103 could add those pieces that were left out of House Bill 54 and still be part of the same package. So I don't see them as contradictory. The only thing that is the dates, but that may not be important anyway.
Mr. Fritz, did you want to say something?
No, Mr. Endell, I did, but Mr. Endell answered what I was going to say, that they're not rival pieces of legislation. One is supposed to underwrite or confirm the other.
And I'd like to also add to that 103 was drafted before Executive Order 54 was drafted. So the intent for this legislation has no way be a stumbling block or another way deterring the efforts of the administration. So I want to clear that up. And Mr. Gall, Mr. Copenin, Mr. Davis.
Yes, I agree with Dr. Fritz and Mr. Endall. And incidentally, I am a co-signer on 103. My view of that bill is that it would pick up some of the loose ends in the executive order. Further, I think it serves everybody's interests here. It does call for the transfer of the youth services into corrections, and it defers it for the period of time that Mr. Endall suggests, and I think both pieces of work are excellent. I also agree with Mr. Davis that the last thing we want to be doing is to delay the process in any way, shape, or form, and therefore it would be my recommendation as a member of the committee that we do not act to disapprove Executive Order 54, and that we pass House Bill 103 out of this committee, which I think will take care of everybody's concerns, as I understand them.
Mr. Copenin?
I was just going to ask if we're not ready to act at this point, if we could have a 3-minute recess.
We will have a 3-minute recess.